Thank you all for coming. I really appreciate, this is my second time doing this presentation up at Holden. I did it about a year ago. Did anybody see this last year? Or everybody, oh good, all, everybody's new. So, my name's Gus Becker and I live in Wenatchee. I'm a wildlife biologist and a forester, but it seems like now I talk on all kinds of different subjects, so I'm actually more of an ecologist because when I was in the Peace Corps down in Ecuador, I did agroforestry and forestry extension, and then I've done some winter ecology stuff, so I'm starting to branch out into a lot of different areas. But so tonight I'm going to talk about grizzly bears and black bears, and we'll cover a little bit of the biology and behavior of black bears and grizzly bears, their natural history, a little bit of the history of the more modern history of bears, particularly grizzly bears in Washington State, and then we'll look at telling the difference between a grizzly bear and a black bear, and we'll finish up with talking about bears and humans and coexisting and living with bears in our environment. And so at any time, if you have a question, just pop in. I'm gonna end this right at an hour. But if you have questions, feel free to ask any questions. And then I do have a lot of stuff to give away as far as information, so you can take anything you want from up here. I'm going to start off by just showing a quick video of two grizzly bears play fighting in Alaska. They are siblings, so they're just playing around, having a little fun.
How much would those weigh?
Yeah, how big are they?
Look at the fur.
So pretty. They're so pretty.
So the big one on the left is probably 600 pounds.
Wow.
And the one on the right is maybe 400.
Wow.
Is that taken at the conservation center in Alaska?
What's that?
Was that taken at the conservation center?
I don't know where it was taken. It was given to me, so I'm not sure where it was taken. So the organization that's sponsoring me today is the Grizzly Bear Outreach Project, and they're based out of Bellingham, and they were formed to about 6 or 7 years ago to talk about grizzly bears, because as I'll explain later, the Washington State has an area in the North Cascades that's called a grizzly bear recovery zone, where they're trying to get grizzly bears to come back in the numbers that they were before in this area. And part of the grizzly bear project was also was to dispel a lot of myths and misconceptions about bears, and particularly grizzly bears, because they've essentially been wiped out from Washington State, and there's a lot of myths and misperceptions about bears, and also particularly about there's a lot of myths about what the federal government's involvement in the grizzly bear recovery area, and so I'm going to try to dispel some of those misconceptions. But generally, when we think about bears, When we're little, we think about, you know, the cuddly little teddy bear. And then as we get older and we start reading books or we go to the movies and we, you know, somewhere in some fictional TV show, they show the bear that hunts man. And which, so, you know, neither, these are the extremes, the scary, terrifying bear and the little teddy bear. But the reality is, you know, the bears fit somewhere in the middle of all this. So, you know, this is a, I think this is actual movie, you know, the man-eating grizzly bear.
She's sitting there smiling.
As far as grizzly bear recovery, there's a belief that, you know, bears are being brought down from Canada, where there's a fair number of grizzly bears, and dropped off in Washington State. So the bears aren't being brought in at night in Black Hawk helicopters.
That's a
myth. But there is there are grizzly bears crossing over from Canada into the U.S., which is populating the North Cascades. So, to give you some context about bears, there are 8 mm-hmm. bear species in the world. And of those 5 species, or 8 species, 6 of them are threatened or endangered. And the threatened and endangered species are the panda, the sloth bear, the sun bear, which is in tropical Asia, the Asiatic bear, which is in Nepal, Himalaya, and the grizzly bear. And the Andean bear and the American black bear are the only bears that really aren't. Polar bears are also threatened, but the American black bear and Andean bear are still healthy populations. So, this will give you an idea of where we're at now. 200 years ago, this was the blue here was the range of the North American grizzly bear. And there were an estimated 50 to 100,000 in this area. Currently, the little green spaces are where you can find grizzly bears now. Well, Yellowstone, which barely shows up there in green. And they've been reduced to 2% of their numbers and 2% of their former range in the U.S., in the lower 48.
When you read the Lewis and Clark journals, they're killing a grizzly bear every other day, it seems like.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they were abundant. This photo was actually taken around Chelan in the early 1900s.
Wow.
And it's just kind of a demonstrative of that time period in the 1900s, there was no regulated hunting. You could hunt as much as you wanted and whenever you wanted. There was a bounty on wolves and bounty on grizzly bears. We were expanding into grizzly bear and black bear habitat. This is some of the causes of the decline of the grizzly bears. And of course, today, you know, we build big highways and we build, you know, houses where bears used to live and still do. And one of the greatest impediments to bear connectivity and moving is roads. So, you know, highways, whenever, in our case, the North Cascades Highway, Highway 2, and the Highway 97, those are big, big barriers to bear movement. Contrary to this photo, bears don't use our roads to move around. So, okay, the big question is, are there still grizzly bears in the North Cascades? And so A couple years ago, about 10 years ago, they did a survey and went out to try to document bear sightings, grizzly bear sightings. And so between 1950 and 1991, all these little dots represent possible grizzly bear sightings. And this outline, by the way, is the North Cascades. So of all these sightings between 1950 and 1991, 81 were highly probable, or what they call class 2 sightings. It was pretty darn sure it was a grizzly bear. And 20 were confirmed class 1 sightings. And a class 1 sighting is, or a class 1 case is a like a biologist clearly identifying it as a grizzly bear. Maybe they found a clear bear a paw print of a grizzly bear. That's called a class 1. Or maybe they found a carcass or a skull. And of course, there's been hundreds of unconfirmed sightings. And hopefully, you'll be able to understand when we're done the differences between a grizzly and a black bear. And maybe you can help us find more grizzly bears. Because
is there a history of grizzlies on the Olympic Peninsula? There are any now.
Not that I know of. That's a good question. I don't think so. Currently, they estimate that there's 5 to 20 grizzly bears in this area up here. That's the current estimate. And in that same area here, there's 6,000 black bears. And as far as Chelan goes, this area, the last grizzly bear sighting was at Moore Point, which is across from Lucerne on the other side of the lake, up towards Stehekin, about, I don't know, 5 or 10 miles. There in the 1990s, a mother grizzly bear with a cub was seen there. So for a long time, years and years, there weren't any sightings, confirmed class 1 sightings, until 2011, a hiker took this photo in the North Cascades. So, 2010, in the fall of 2010, a hiker photographed this bear. He took the picture in the fall, kept the picture for like 6 months, showed it to his friends, and didn't really tell anybody about it. And then one of his friends said, you know, you should really report that. That kind of looks like a grizzly bear. And so he, almost a year later, he gave the photos to some bear biologists, and these photos got passed around, and they confirmed it was a grizzly bear. It's the first class 1 confirmed grizzly bear in the North Cascades in about 12 or 15 years.
And where was it?
Outside of New Halem, somewhere on the west side of the west side of the Cascades. Mm-hmm. And the Forest Service right now they're surveying for grizzly bears, and this was actually taken by one of those remote cameras. Oh. And the Forest Service right now has they're called hair snag stations. What they do is they go out into the forest and they take a strand of barbed wire and they find 4 trees, like, and they string a strand of barbed wire about this high, about knee high, between 4 trees, and then in the middle of it, they put this really stinky scent that hunters use, and then any bear that smells that will come over, and they'll either go over or under the barbed wire. When they do that, they leave hair on the barbed wire. So the biologists will come back. They'll set these up, and 2 weeks later they'll come back, and they'll take hair off of the barbed wire strand, and then they send it in to get it analyzed, the DNA, to find out if it's a grizzly bear or a black bear. So I think this summer is the third summer where the Forest Service has been out all over the North Cascades doing these bear, they're looking for grizzly bear. And they, unfortunately, the first two summers, they've got no grizzly bear. No photos, no hair samples of grizzly bears. So they've struck out. But when you consider how big, this is 10,000 square miles. So when you consider how the chances of finding a grizzly bear in this area, it's like looking for a needle in a haystack. It's really tough. So Washington State does have grizzly bears in this area, and of course the Selkirk up way up here, because these bears are coming in from Idaho, which has a big population of grizzly bears. This slide just gives you an idea just how many grizzly bears there used to be. Well, look at this number. In this time period of about, 30 years?
32 years.
Almost 4,000 grizzly bear pelts were shipped out of Washington State. And these are records kept by the Hudson Bay Fur Company, which the Hudson Bay Fur Company, it was a British company, a British fur company, and they were meticulous record keepers. If you were British, if you're anybody's in here who knows the British, they're like kind of anal about stuff. So this is really accurate.
Yeah.
We think it's really accurate, but you know, we used to have a healthy population. So in 1975, the grizzly bears were listed as threatened species in the United States. In 1983, they formed a committee to try to protect or recover what was left of the grizzly bears in the lower 48. This committee designated six areas they call recovery areas, where they believe there's enough bear habitat to sustain grizzly bears. And so they identified these six areas: Yellowstone, the Selway Bitterroot Mountains on the border of Idaho and Montana, the Northern Continental Divide, the Cabinet Yak area, and the Cabinet Yak, that's a mountain range in Montana. That's where they got these names. So the Cabinet Yak, the Selkirks, and in Washington, the North Cascades is the recovery area that I'm talking about specifically right now. And so these are areas where they're going to try to protect the bear habitat. They'll limit road building. They will limit some logging activity and try to basically keep human disturbance really low, because it's the human disturbance that has caused the decline of the bear in the West. It's been our insistence on building roads and houses and shooting them on sight. A little bit more about this recovery area. You can see where it goes from I-90 all the way up to the Canadian border, and it actually goes into Canada up here. So we share the management with Canada in this recovery area. It's large, 10,000 square miles, and it's mostly 90% federal or state land. It's remote area. If there's going to be grizzly bears, this would be a place to have them. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the biology of the bear, and where do they live, what do they eat, how many young do they have, etc. So grizzly bears prefer high alpine areas, these open meadows like this, which is right here in Lucerne. If you look up out there, you can see Martin Ridge, that ridge right back here behind Holden. It looks just like this. This is really good grizzly bear habitat. Again, more alpine. a little bit about their about the grizzly bears. They're very intelligent. They're shy and wary of humans. They can live 20 to 30 years. The oldest known grizzly bear that was ever recorded in a wild grizzly bear, they estimated it was 37 years old. They breed between May and July, and then they go into their dens in October and November and don't come out until March or April. So they spend 6 months in their den and don't come out. And which means, basically, you know, in the winter, we're pretty much safe from running into any bears. And we don't have to worry about them. But they are intelligent. So one of these days they're going to figure out that people are still running around in the winter, especially these cross-country skiers.
What's the gestation period for a...
Well, they breed in May and July, and then they give birth in January. So what is that?
6 months.
6 months? Uh-huh. They'll give birth in the den in January.
Okay.
So... while they're in the den, they don't eat, they don't urinate, they don't defecate, and they don't drink any water for 6 months. That's amazing if you think about it. So that's one of the reasons they fatten up. They're so, this right now, for the next 2 months, they're just going to be gorging on berries, anything they can eat. And what's real interesting is, medically, how does a bear go into hibernation for 6 months and not urinate, not defecate? There's something special about their kidney function, mm-hmm. which if we could learn scientifically what it is that their kidneys, how they can function with, you know, no water intake, although they metabolized water when they burned fat, but still, medically, it's astounding that they can do that.
What happens to their metabolism? What happens to the heart rate?
Drops to like, it drops to like 10 to 12 beats a minute.
From what?
You know, I don't know what their normal heart rate is. I think it's probably a lot like ours, 60 or 70.
So
but yeah, their heart rate drops to like 10 to 12.
If the cub is born, didn't you say January?
Yes.
How is the offspring nourished?
Their mother's milk, which I'll talk about in a
okay.
minute. So the young, I'll get to that. So a little bit, so the bears are, they have an incredible sense of smell. And this goes for black bears also. Their smell is 9 times better than a dog. So they can smell apples sitting on a second story, just on somebody's deck from a mile away. That's how sensitive they are. They have an incredible sense of smell. They're very fast, so you can't outrun a bear. And you probably heard the joke about the two backpackers that were... that were here in Holden, and they were hiking up the trail, and they ran into a ranger coming down the trail that told him that she had just seen a bear up the trail, and she explained to him, you know, what to do, that they're fast, and you can't outrun them. And then the ranger, you know, came back down to her camp, and the two Holden villagers were, you know, one of them stopped and reached into his backpack and pulled out his tennis shoes and took off his boots, and he was putting his tennis shoes on, and his partner that he was hiking with said, "What are you doing? Didn't you hear the rangers say that you can't outrun a bear? They're too fast. Why are you putting your tennis shoes on?" And his partner said, "Well, I don't have to be faster than the bear. I just have to run faster than you." A little bit about their reproduction. So female grizzly bears don't breed until they're about 5 or 6 years old. And here's the comparison for black bears, about 4. They often have two in a litter. Is more common. Sometimes they have one, sometimes three. The cubs will stay with the mother bear for from 2.5 to 3.5 years. A female may give birth to about 10 cubs. Black bears will typically give birth to about 24, so they're much more prolific. And then, interesting enough, no more than 50% of grizzly bear cubs will live to be adults. A couple interesting things. The cubs stay with the female for 2.5 to 3.5 years. A female grizzly will not breed when she has cubs with her, which is important. It slows down their reproductive rate. And another interesting thing is the male bear has absolutely nothing to do with raising the young. The male grizzly bear, all he does is mate with the female, and then he leaves, and he'll go and look for other mates. So the mother is left to rear the young, and all by herself. And she won't get pregnant until those cubs leave on their own.
Do male grizzlies ever attack cubs?
Well, so, yeah, there are theories that the male grizzlies will attack the cubs so that the female goes into heat. If she doesn't have cubs, he can breed with her. So there's speculation that male grizzlies have been known to kill the cubs. Biologists have theorized that the reason they kill the cubs is to bring the female into heat, which, you know, it sounds somewhat logical. I don't know if I'm a total believer in that, but...
Can you, the 50% of the cubs making it to a year, do you have any idea if that's mostly natural or man-made causes? Why are we losing 50%?
Right, okay, yeah, so mortality is illness, accidents, predation, they'll get killed by somebody else or some other animal. It's all the kind of typical things. It's tough to survive out there. I mean, honey, not so much in this case because we just...
Tough world out there.
You can't hunt grizzly bears here in Washington, but it's, you know, surviving a winter. If something happens to the mother, because the female could become injured, she could get hurt, she could die of illness, and then the cubs are left alone. So it's those are the things that cause the mortality of the cubs. The question about the young, so when they're born in January, they're about the size of a squirrel, which is like 7 ounces, 8 ounces, and then they start to feed on their mother's milk, and by the time 1 year later, they're about 80 times the weight of when they were born. So and of course the mother's milk is very nutritious, but that they just instinctively find where to go to get the milk.
Do the babies, when they're in hibernation with their mothers, do they urinate, or is that good?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know. My guess is that they do. I would think so, because they're growing.
I can't wait.
But that's a real good question. I can't imagine that they would have no...
Because they're active feeding. They're active feeding, right?
Yeah, they're actively feeding, and I just can't imagine. I'll find out, though. That's a really good question, but...
So the mother just keeps hibernating.
Yeah.
Baby
yep.
grows.
Yep.
By itself for a little while.
Yeah, and they'll wake up and move around and whatnot, but they're never really active until the spring.
I wonder if the mother cleans them up when she's moving and kind of unconscious, like some dogs will clean their puppies up at first.
Yeah, it would be interesting. Someday they'll put a camera in and watch those. I'm sure somebody has. But, you know, the cubs learn everything from their mother. A little bit about the area they use. So, females use about 50 to 300 square miles of area. And the bears aren't territorial, so they don't stake out an area. They will stake out like a deer carcass or an elk carcass. They'll guard it. But the bear habitat and territories overlap, particularly with the males, because the males travel. You can see the males have a larger home range. They travel quite a bit because they're always looking. They're basically out to reproduce. They're looking for females as much as they can. They want to reproduce. And then, you know, these home ranges that they use vary according to the food. If you're a grizzly bear living in Alaska next to a salmon stream, you don't have to travel, 50 miles to get food. It's right there. So for example, Alaska brown bears or grizzly bears, their territory is very small compared to what we expect in the North Cascades. Some differences. Black bears are more found in the forested habitats. They're tree climbers. Black bears have, this is a black bear claw, and this is a grizzly bear claw. I don't know if you can see that, but so the black bears are tree climbers, and these are their little tree climbing claws, and the grizzly bears, guess what they use these for?
Digging,
yes, turning over rocks. And so they're not as good as tree climbers as the black bears. And I'll talk a little bit about that.
Good.
So, what do grizzly bears eat? Well, surprisingly, 90% of their diet is vegetation. So, they're not these just meat-eating, carnivorous, marauding animals. This is all real... easy to determine by looking at bear scat.
What are forbs?
Forbs are non-herbaceous plants that aren't grasses. So I'll show you some forbs. It's everything that's green and leafy that's not a grass. I'll show you some. But this is their diet. And this, for me, is kind of incredible because, you know, the grizzly bears and black bears, they don't have like a rumen, like a cows have a rumen, and they have like three stomachs or something, so they can digest grasses, but bears don't have that. So this is real interesting to me that they eat that much vegetation.
Do deer have more than one stomach? I don't even know.
I think they have a rumen, which is like a second stomach, but I don't know for sure. So here are some of their favorite foods. Over 100 plants have been identified as bear forage. So here's a forb. This is a horsetail that grows along the riverbanks. And in the spring, the bears will be out eating. The bears will be out eating these. Of course, if they come across carrion, a winter-killed deer, they'll stay on this and eat it until it's gone, and they'll defend that. In the spring, they love the fresh grasses along the stream banks. In the summer, they start digging for mushrooms, opening up logs, looking for grubs and insects, plant roots, insects. So now here's an interesting one. In the Rocky Mountains, there's this moth called the army cutworm moth. And it lives, well, actually, it doesn't live there, but see all this rocky talus? The cutworm moth, during the heat of the day, goes under the rocks where it's cool, and it estivates or rests all day long. So there will be thousands of these moths underneath these rocks and these talus slopes, and the grizzly bears will spend all day eating these moths, turning over the rocks on these talus slopes, and they will eat thousands of these. And I find this really incredible because if you remember back to your biology class when you were like in sixth grade or seventh grade, they always talked about the web of life, how everything's connected. And this is a great example. Here you have a 400 or 500 pound mammal that's huge. And he's eating little bitty moths. And it's incredible to me. And it just goes to show you how everything is connected. We never know in the natural world what kind of connections there are. Of course, in the spring or in the fall, this is where the bears are at. They're gouging on berries.
Continued on from the trail, from the beach, where people go down, and there was one of those piles. We couldn't tell if it had been regurgitated or diarrhea, but there was a pile of the service berries along the beach there.
When the bears are eating the berries, like last year, when I was here a year ago, there was a black bear that everybody in the village, I think, saw when they walked up to the 10 Mile Falls. Mm-hmm. I think everybody saw it. And if you go out there, maybe not even 300 yards, there's a big berry patch that bisects the trail. There's a section where the trail kind of goes like this and it's open. Well, above and below is full of berries. And that's where I sat last year and watched the bear eat for about 20 minutes. It was old. I called him old one ear because he was missing an ear on one side.
You didn't mention salmon in their diet.
They eat salmon. Not obviously all the bears in the Alaska area, and I don't know if they get, if there's places in the North Cascades where the salmon get high.
I see what you mean.
Where they get high enough to that they would eat them up in this area. All right, well.
I have a question about the weight they are when they hibernate, and then how much do they lose over the winter?
Oh, right. Let me see if I can remember that.
A lot.
I don't remember, but I have it. I think it's in the little brochure I have. That's a good question. I don't know how much. I'll remember by the end of the. But yeah, they know there is a figure how much they lose. Okay, so I'll try to talk a little bit about living with bears, hiking in bear country, what to do if you see a bear, and living around bears isn't a problem, really, because they're smart enough to know that, we're not really interesting. And they pretty much leave us alone. Whenever we have bear problems, it's because they associate us with food. And we're, I live in Wenatchee, and I hear about the folks up in Leavenworth, that there are a lot of, there's a fair amount of people that come from Puget Sound to Leavenworth for the weekend, and then they leave on Sunday night, and the trash doesn't get picked up till Monday, so the trash can goes out on Sunday night and they leave, and then the bears come in to get the trash. So they're, you know, we just have to be smart about how we have to be careful and kind of think like a bear. These are actually taken at the Woodland Park Zoo. This is the grizzly bear trying to get into one of those bear-resistant food containers. The town of Leavenworth has gone to they purchased some bear-resistant cans that lock. They lock up here, and those are great because the bears can't get into them. And they in Leavenworth, the city will provide people with a bear-resistant trash can if they're having bear problems. I think he's really sad because he couldn't get in here. Because it's locked. See, it's locked right there. And he couldn't get in. They actually, there's a place in Montana where you can, if you build what they call a bear-resistant trash can, you can actually send it to a place in Montana to get it certified as bear-resistant. What they do is they put trash in it, and they lock it up and they put it in some kind of a corral with grizzly bears. And if it survives an hour without a bear breaking into it, then they'll stamp it as bear resistant. You can sell it as a bear resistant trash can.
You know, I live in Anchorage, Alaska, and they tested, I watched them test those cans on three bears, grizzly bears, at the Alaska Zoo. They fill it with stinky, rotten sand.
Oh, yeah. So if you're a hiker or a camper, there's a couple things you can do. You can carry these bear-resistant containers. Sometimes places will give them to you. Most people would, if you know you're in bear habitat, you would just hang your food up in a tree. Especially if you'd actually seen a bear that day, that's a good idea to do. So this is a list of things that attract bears around your house. Garbage being number one, bird seed, fruit, compost, and I know up here you guys don't put meat in your compost, I guess, and hopefully, I don't think you do, but you leave fish and meat and smelly stuff out of your compost. You can use lime in your compost to keep bears away. But they'll come after pet food, even the grease on your barbecue.
Wow.
And this is a black bear. He's going after the bird seed. They'll go to great lengths. They'll go to great lengths to go get even your bird seed. Back in Montana, Idaho, occasionally they'll take some cattle. Very rarely, they do take some sheep, but I don't know if it's a really big problem there. In the whole state of Idaho and Montana, I think they estimate 25 to 50 cattle or sheep killed a year by grizzly bears.
I think ranchers overreact, though. I have an in-law relative that's a Montana rancher, and that family's sure that they would be better off if there were no grizzly bears anywhere.
Yeah, and on Wednesday I'm giving a talk on wolves, and we'll talk a little bit more about the ranching community and wolves. That's, if you think they're angry about grizzly bears, wait till you don't get talking about a wolf. This system is really effective for deterring bears, because bears, they approach any food source and anything that's curious with their nose. And just a simple little electric fence, if they go up to sniff the food and they get shocked on their nose, that's all they need to keep them away. So This is a really inexpensive way to keep bears away. And ultimately, you know, in campgrounds, like in Yosemite, if a bear keeps coming back to a dumpster, he's going to associate the dumpster with humans, and that leads to bad bear encounters. And ultimately, the game department will either relocate or shoot the bear. They just don't want to risk people getting hurt. So some of the things we can do, you know, obviously hiking with a group is great, because usually when you're hiking with a group, you're talking, and the bears will hear you coming and get out of the way. When you're camping, you know, you kind of, if you're in bear territory, you don't want to, you know, keep smelly foods out of your tent. It's a good idea to cook a little bit, you know, a distance away from your tent. If you've seen a bear that day or that evening near your campsite, I would hang my food up. Because if I saw a bear the same day in the area I was camping, I would not keep any food around my tent.
If you're car camping, can you just put it in your car and lock it, or will they try to rip your car open and get
it? You can put it in your car and lock it, although if you're in Yellowstone,
It doesn't work.
That doesn't work, yeah. In Yellowstone, they'll bust your car open. Around here, you know, they're just not, there aren't that many, and they're not that conditioned. And in a campground, they'll usually tell you that there's a problem bear around. And in the really bad areas, like in Yellowstone, they provide you these big metal lockers where you can put your food in, and it all locks up. It's not in your car, it's in the metal locker.
That's the way it is in Yosemite, too. More point has in there.
We had a bear break into a bus here.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I know. I heard that story.
Yeah.
I heard that. It's a great story. Yeah, do you want to tell the story real quick?
Well, I don't really know it that well.
Does anybody know it?
There's, you know, they store a lot of the recycle in this old school bus, and it must have been, you know, food scent on the recycle, and the bear got in there and wrecked havoc.
Janice knows the story.
It was a landfill bus.
It was actual trapped garbage that they kept in the bus. And correct me if I get this wrong, but when it fill up, I guess you would take it down to Lucerne.
Well, you empty it out.
Okay.
Periodically.
Well, one time.
But what I heard was that they went to lock it up after it happened, and they locked the bear inside.
They did.
Yeah.
Yeah. they locked the bear inside the bus overnight, and he probably just had a feast.
Yeah.
And then I don't know. What I want to know is how they got the bear out the next day.
Yeah. I think they went back to clean up the mess or something.
No. He burst up.
Oh, he came out?
Janice, do you know?
I'm not sure.
Oh, I heard that when they finally heard it, they made some noise too, and he bust out one of the
they had some repairs to do.
Let's see, I better finish. So what about when you, what do you do when you encounter a bear? Well, you know, one of the things is remember that, you know, bears don't want to encounter. So obviously this is what not to do around a bear. If you were to do this in Yellowstone, you'd probably get eaten. These are the four main bear encounters that could go wrong. If you surprise a bear, which is probably the most likely around here, you're walking down the trail turns around a corner, and you know you're going up and the bear's coming down, you bump into each other. Well, how do you avoid surprising a bear? You're talkative, you're in a group. If you're by yourself, I'll whistle sometimes, or I'll just yell, "Hey bear," every now and then. I mean, mean, if I get, like, if you go up the 10-mile trail and then go up and over, like, into that other drainage, there's a section there where you're going through a creek, and it's big, high slide alder. I mean, a bear could be 10 feet away, and you don't know it. When I was hiking in there, I was yelling, "Bear, I'm here, don't eat me, bear." You know, they won't come. They're not out to eat you. They will move. They'll leave.
But so, now, when you turn the corner on the trail and you go like, "Oh my gosh, there's a bear right there," what do you do?
Yeah, we'll get to that.
Oh.
So, the other, of course, other problems, you know, a mom with cubs, the mother's going to do everything she can to protect her cubs. So, if you come across a mother bear with cubs, whatever you do, don't do anything threatening. Because if you step toward the mother, she's going to take that as a threatening. So, if you back up, she's gonna realize, oh, this person doesn't mean me any harm. I'm just they're backing away. But if you take 4 or 5 steps, oh, like the cute bear, the mother's gonna take that as a threat. So, if you come across a bear in the wild that's on a carcass, a deer carcass, this is like, you know, ice cream, birthday cake to the bear. They don't eat a lot of meat, so. If they're on a dead carcass, they're gonna defend it. So don't, again, you're not gonna go up and see what they're eating. And then, you know, human conditioned bear is the bears that are in campgrounds, or they associate food with you, or it's the cabins where people just throw their trash out the back. These are all. Bad situations, and you know, if you think like a bear and don't threaten it and be observant, you're going to avoid any bad bear encounters. So, to answer your question about what do you do if you come around and surprise a bear on the trail and you're 10 feet away, if the bear is moving toward me, and if it's big like this, I'm going to drop down and do this. I'm going to cover my neck and curl up. And the bear is going to immediately know that you're not a threat. If you're not a threat of, you know, you're not going to get eaten, he may come up. I mean, people do this, and the bear will come up and blow in their ear and sniff and maybe even swat at you. If the bear is not moving and he's standing still, this is a good tactic. Especially if it's a black bear, you know, just letting him know that you're not something that they can eat. You know, standing up big, I wouldn't threaten it. I wouldn't take any steps toward the bear, but I would back up and just, you know, make yourself large looking.
That's what they told us to do. I live where there's some cougars sometimes, and that's what they do. It's like, take your jacket and make it big.
Yeah. Well, tomorrow I'm talking about cougars.
Oh,
so
really?
Tomorrow is cougar night. So I'll talk about cougars.
Bring your jacket.
So, cougars are interesting. They're, so a little bit, to put all this into perspective, the bear, you know, in the last 100 years, you know, 18 people have been killed by a grizzly bear. Domestic dogs will kill 18 people every year in the U.S. Some other kind of grim statistics. We're more likely to die of a snake bite. 200 people a year die from bees and wasps. And of course, whenever we get in a car, we're risking putting our lives at risk. So, I better hurry up. We're almost done. We'll talk a little bit about bear identification. What time is it?
Quarter after.
Okay. I'm going a little bit long. I'm talking too much. So, bear ID, If you're hiking in the woods and you come across ripped up log, that's a good sign there might be a bear around. If you're hiking in the woods and you see this big rock that was flipped over, that might be a grizzly bear. And if I was hiking in the woods and I saw this big rock flipped over like that, you know what I would do? I'd peek underneath the rock, and if the grass was still all fresh and green like this, that means the bear's pretty darn close. If the rock, if I looked under the rock and the grass is all yellow and wilted, I know that that bear is probably long gone. Remember that if you, the grizzly bears are diggers, they have those big claws, so if you come across an area that's been, something's been digging in the roots, turned over, that's a grizzly bear dig. This is a little bit harder to identify, but the bears will bed. They'll bed down during the heat of the day. Did you see one?
We've seen that. We came across an area where it was along the trail. It was all padded down, all
the ground. We knew something laid down.
Okay, yeah.
It was interesting.
That could have been a bear.
And we saw the log that was all
so, part two. If you these are hard to find, but bears will bed down during the day, the heat of the day. If you find black bears will scrape the bark off of the trees to lick the cambium. Of course, bear scat are good identifiers that there's a bear in the area. This is just a quick differences between bear weights and sizes. So, how do you difference between grizzly bear and a black bear? Okay, color is not an indicator. There are brown black bears, and there are black grizzly bears. And there are red grizzly bears and red black bears, so throw color out the window. The main identifiers are black bears have big ears, grizzly bears have little ears. Black bears have big, long noses. Black bears have a more concave, flat face. And then, of course, there's the hump, which I'll talk about. The grizzly bears have a distinct hump. And the hump, though, you can only really see when they're down on all fours. If they're down on all fours, that hump is real obvious. But a black bear, if he's on a hillside and happens to be, you know, twisted or something, sometimes it can look like he has a hump. But fortunately, I think the best way for us that we're going to be able to identify is by the tracks, and I'll talk a little bit about that. More likely than not, when I was hiking up to Hart Lake, there were areas where I could see used to be mud or the river was flowing, and there's all kinds of tracks in there. So I walked off the trail to look and see what kind of tracks I could find. But more likely, we're going to be able to identify a grizzly bear in this area, if there is one, by the track. And immediately notice that the claw marks are a lot, there's a longer distance here between the toe pad and the claw mark. Because remember, the grizzly bears have those huge claws. And then if you're really scientific about it, if you draw a line from the bottom of the big toe to the top of the toe pad and drew a line all the way across to over here, and if this little toe is more than half above that line, it's a grizzly bear. That's the scientific method for determining. And then the sheer size is an indicator, because this is a grizzly bear paw print.
Whoa.
From a grizzly bear in Montana, and this is a black bear paw print. So sheer size, and this is not uncommon. This isn't like a giant grizzly bear. This is your average everyday grizzly bear paw print. I'm almost done. Sorry to take so long. Oh yeah, here's your test. So is that a black bear or a grizzly bear?
Black bear.
Yeah. How come?
Ears.
Yeah. Long nose and ears. But wait a minute, it's brown.
Blonde.
Is that? Yeah, grizzly bear. It's on all fours and it's got a clear hump. Well, not to mention you can barely see its ears. What's that one?
Black.
Yeah, black bear.
Ears
popping. Big ears, huge ears. That's a dead giveaway.
Black.
That one's got
long snout.
Yeah, long snout, black bear. See how you know, like over here, you really can't see the face, but the ears give it away. Mm-hmm. Over here, you can't see the ears, but that long narrow snout gives it away. Here's a harder one.
Sasquatch. It's black.
It's a longer
black.
No,
mama. I think it's a black bear.
He's got a longer nose.
Longer nose.
The ears, I can see here.
But you see, it looks like it has a hump. But remember, it's not in a, it's in a weird position that, to make it look like a hump.
Mm-hmm.
That's a little grizzly.
It's got the dish nose.
That one's a tough one. No, it's got kind of a long nose, but it's got a hump, and that's a grizzly bear. Can't really see the ears.
Black
bear, yeah, you guys are really good.
That's a hump, probably.
That's like half a bear, but that's a hump. Yeah.
That's a camel.
Holden Villager.
It's what?
It's a
Holden Villager.
Holden Villager.
So, I am all done with my lecture presentation. I'm sorry it took a little bit longer. The Grizzly Bear Outreach Project did survey people in the North Cascades, did a phone survey. They wanted to know if people favored, agreed with the grizzly bear recovery in Washington. And according to this, apparently people are okay with grizzly bear recovery. Currently, you know, we don't know. My guess is there's no more than 10 or 15 grizzly bears, if any, in the North Cascades. But they are trying to protect them. And if you were to see a bear track, I would really encourage you to take a photo of it. Report any sightings you can, because it would be great to know if someone comes across a bear. And then thank you very much. I'll be here. Help yourself to any material. Tomorrow I'm doing this presentation on cougars, and then Wednesday I'm doing a presentation on wolves, and Friday, where I'm going to take everybody out for really short, easy nature walk. On Friday.
I'm sorry we're out of time.
Yeah, we're done. Thank you.
Yeah.